Remember virtual reality? Back in the 90s, it was going to be the technology of the future, but today it's actually here. If you have a pricey VR headset, a spare room, and a high-end gaming computer, you too can feel like you're standing on top of Mount Everest or zooming over the surface of some far-off planet.
It's really peaceful.
So when I tried VR for myself, though, what drew me in were the little things, like a butterfly fluttering into the frame.
Look, it landed on my little sensor.
Those little touches that give a sense of place, that's what put me at ease and drew me to explore.
Can I open one of the books?
Sometimes where the designers probably didn't intend me to look.
Yeah, they've got an awful lot of tuna.
But that said, the big stuff, you know, the things we could never experience in real life, that's what really cracks open your imagination.
Oh my God, we're in outer space. Looking at the Earth. Oh my God, and there's the sun. I'm in space.
So now that VR can put you in a simulated space that's so real, you want to touch the butterflies, or so fantastic you feel like drunk on awe, what do we do with this amazing tool? Well, storytellers and journalists have started experimenting, and at the forefront is a guy named Will Smith. He recently created a virtual reality talk show. It's called The Foo Show, and in it, he interviews game developers inside the environments from their favorite games. Will thinks that eventually virtual spaces will go way beyond games, into theater, science, and more. So I watched the Firewatch episode of The Foo Show yesterday, and this was my first experience using a VR headset, and it felt so real, to the point that there was a producer in the room helping me out, and I had to ask at some point if he was still here. Is that is that common for people to like lose sense of the world you left behind?
Yeah, it definitely is, especially with the kind of room scale and standing, walking around experiences like you get with the Vive or with Oculus Touch. The thing that we wanted to do with the Foo Show, and the Foo Show is just the first of the things we've produced. We've done some other stuff since then. So with the Foo Show, we built a VR environment that lets us jump into those formerly intangible places, like a set from a video game, and explore it with the creators as if it's a real place. I talked to a biochemist who makes nanomachines out of DNA, and we start out in a recreation of his lab and then do a kind of powers of 10 thing where we get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller.
Wow.
Until we end the episode standing between the two lipid layers on an E. coli cell. And we actually see the mechanics of how he uses viruses to create the DNA segments that make the machines that he's building with DNA.
So that sounds so cool. But, you know, I'm the generation, I remember, what was that thing? Was it Fantastic Voyage? You know,
yeah.
Or remember the Magic School Bus, you know, things where they take you inside the bloodstream or something. How is this different?
Well, so this is interactive. As you said, when you have the headset on and the in-game camera and your head position are tracking to the point that your brain forgets that what it's seeing isn't real, your brain kind of records and stores that in a different way than it does, say, watching the Magic School Bus on the 19-inch TV in your living room or Fantastic Voyage or whatever it happens to be. And because you can pick things up and handle them and look at them, kind of explore them at your own pace, it gives you a different opportunity and a different way to kind of engage with that, with whatever the story is that you're telling.
What's it like to host a show in virtual space? To have your guest in headsets and they're in this 3D virtual world with you.
We weren't really sure how long it took people to adjust to the avatars, because we're not looking at each other. We're looking at video game stylized representations of each other.
Well, thank you guys for coming by.
Dude, this is awesome. I want to live here.
You know, they move like people and they look like people, but you know, there's no facial tracking. It looks like a cartoon or a video game character.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure how long it would take Jake and Sean to adjust to talking to avatars. So, you know, for the first 5 or 6 minutes, they were just kind of looking around like, this is really weird.
I don't even want to go back to my normal reality where things don't just show up in my face.
There you go, Sean.
Oh, there we go. That's my normal reality.
Do I like this? Is my brain okay with this? I'm not sure.
I was totally into this and not freaking out until you touched the back of my head and my animal brain went, where are you?
What is...
And then we got to a point where everybody was comfortable 5 or 10 minutes in, and we just started having a conversation like you and I are right now.
I'm just trying to think what it would be like if you feel like you've met somebody in virtual reality, in virtual space, but never in real space. And then, I don't know, say you ran into them in an airport.
Well, so that strange. It's funny. These are all things that have happened to me. My lead developer, my team's virtual. I live in San Francisco, and it doesn't make sense to set up offices here because things are so expensive these days. But my lead engineer is in New Mexico, and I met him after working with him for almost a year for the first time at a conference last year. And like, I knew his body language already because that comes across through the avatars when we're in the studio. You know, we do our stand-up meetings every week in the studio. So, you know, I knew how he moved. I knew how tall he was. And I knew kind of how he looks around, how he moves his head, and how he moves his shoulders, even though it was the first time we'd met in person.
You know, I've read about virtual reality before. This is the first time I experienced it. And the whole space was so amazing to me that, well, I confess I should have just been listening to you, but I was wandering around it because you can move. I'm pulling every book out on the shelf. I tried to pour myself a mug of scotch because there's a bottle of scotch on a desk. I tried to walk out onto the balcony to look at the mountains and the sunset. Maybe that's not so great to make such a wonderful space that your audience gets completely distracted.
Well, I mean, one of the things that we found is that there's two things. One is that when you take away people's, what are most people's two favorite senses, right? Their sight and their hearing, and you're taking over those senses entirely, you have to give them something that is incredibly engaging. It's a completely different kind of content than, say, if you're making a TV show that you expect people to sit on the couch and watch their iPhone, or making a podcast or a radio show that you expect people to listen to while they're driving home from work. So we wanted to make something that was super, super engaging and had lots of interactivity and lots of things for people to explore. So when you tell me you got lost exploring the environment and weren't really paying attention to the conversation, I'm totally okay with that. I think that's great.
It was a little like what I imagine the experience of being a ghost would be like, because I'm there in the room and I'm watching you guys, but you never acknowledge my presence. I'm so invisible that at one point, one of you walked right through me. Which was a really unsettling experience. I don't know. Do people get used to that?
People definitely get used to it. It's something that we're going to work around. We didn't realize, you know, everybody on my team spends a lot of time playing video games. So they were kind of used to the weird rules of video games where people sometimes move through your body and things like that. The fly on the wall perspective is a really interesting metaphor for what we do, though, because it's unlike, you know, if you're watching Charlie Rose, you feel like you're at home sitting in your living room because that's what's surrounding you. I have always wanted to sit at the third seat where the camera is on Charlie Rose and kind of have the conversation where I'm looking left, I'm looking right, I'm looking left, I'm looking right while Charlie and his guest are talking to each other. So we were excited that kind of came through in the Foo Show. Mm.
I guess I'm curious thinking about, for instance, how Netflix changed whether people wanted to go out or stay in to see a movie. Is virtual reality going to replace physical experience? Why bother going out to a concert or a show or really anything when you can just put on a headset and explore the world?
I think that what we're going to see VR slot into is, you know, it's just another one of those things that's competing for your entertainment time. Would I rather sit on the couch and watch Netflix reruns of an 80s TV show, or would I rather put on a virtual reality headset and try something new? I'm going to pick VR every time, but that's, you know, that's who I am. And I think that some people will head towards virtual reality experiences, and some people will try VR shooting games, and some people will try VR interactive theater experiences, and some people will load up the thing that lets them sit on top of Mount Everest or go to the Sistine Chapel.
It seems to me that the most exciting implication of what you're talking about is the potential for new kinds of storytelling. And I have just a little sense from hearing you talk that you maybe feel like we've only just cracked open what could be something brand new.
That's absolutely the case. If you think about the history of film and cinematography, and most of the tools that we built to tell stories in video games and TV and on film, they work in those mediums because the director and the director of photography and the cinematographer control what you're looking at and how you see it. With VR, we can't take control of that stuff, because if we do, it makes viewers uncomfortable. It makes them actually physically nauseous when you take control of the camera from them. So instead, we have to build an entirely new way to tell stories that's closer or more analogous to, say, interactive theater or black box theater, or even things like escape rooms or experiences like Sleep No More in New York, where you have these kind of interactive theater experiences where you go through. But you take away a lot of the things that make people uncomfortable with interactive theater. Like, if you want to go experience Sleep No More but don't want to have the performers interact with you, that's a little bit of a challenging mechanic for the performers and the showrunners to handle. But for us, you can just check a box when you load up the interactive theater experience and say, look, I don't want to be interacted with. I just want to see how this whole thing works and experience it. And you're not in an uncomfortable social situation if that's a thing that you don't like.
Yeah, but even thinking about what a story is, it's sort of interesting because we think, so if we started with novels and print, right? And a story there is a story that one person is telling you that's unfolding and they're telling you what's happening and they're describing the characters. But reality is filtered for you through this storyteller. And then, you know, along comes radio and then film. And we kept adapting the same form of telling a story to these new platforms. But from what you're saying, in virtual reality, there isn't really a storyteller. So how do you tell a story?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's you as the developer of that piece of software, of that program, or the teller of that story, needs to either, you know, kind of pull the viewer through that experience by providing breadcrumbs or story cues or something like that. Or alternately, you need to give them a world that's open-ended enough that they can experience it however they want and they can make their own stories, right? So right. You give them essentially a sandbox to go play in with multiple people, and you know, you set some challenges and goals along the way, and then the things that happen to surpass those challenges are the story that those players take away from the end of that experience.
What has to happen before this kind of thing can reach a broader, bigger audience? Because it's pretty specialized right now and expensive.
Yeah, right now you need a fair amount of expensive hardware. The headsets are, you know, $400, $500, $600. You need a high-end gaming PC to make those work. That's going to cost another $600, $800, or up dollars. You know, I think next year we're going to see headsets that don't require a desktop PC to work, or that you don't slot your phone into, that are kind of combined. You know, right now you can plug your Google Pixel phone or your Gear VR, your Samsung phone into a special headset. When we see untethered headsets that use cell phone technology but aren't necessarily cell phones, that track and have hands the way the headset that use the Vive and the Oculus Touch work, then I think we'll see much broader market penetration for all of the virtual reality technology.
Well, to me, the most interesting part of the experience actually was what happened at the end when I took the headset off. Because you know how it feels to see a movie in the theater and you get really absorbed, and then when the lights go back up, there's this feeling of being disoriented. Well, it was like that, but worse, because for a few minutes, that virtual reality actually seemed realer than actual reality, and also possibly better. Like, I was a little disappointed to come back to the real world. Do you get that feeling too?
Unfortunately, the bad news is that kind of, I always call it VR vertigo. It kind of fades after you use the headset more. So you lose that realer than real mind altering sense after the first few dozen times you put the headset on. So enjoy it while it lasts, but you don't have to worry about any kind of spiritual ennui after you take the headset off, after you use it for a few more times.
I don't know whether to be relieved or disappointed.
I miss it. I'm a little bummed out. It was, I remember walking around in a daze the first time I tried the Vive, and I had to go shoot an interview with one of my colleagues describing that experience to our viewers at Tested. And it was a challenge to not be the most enthusiastic I've ever been about anything after trying that, because it was something that was so new. You're when the deep parts of your mind are completely fooled into thinking that something that's software is real, then you have a different level of reaction to it than you normally do. And you know, I'm 40 years old. You know, my brain isn't presented with too many things that are completely novel in every way at this point. And that was something that VR did for me when I first tried it, which was, I think, the thing that made me so excited and gave me that a lot of that sense.
Will Smith is the founder of Foo VR, and he's the host of The Foo Show,